So the paper today is called Touring the Dead Lands in Lead and Victorian Private Residential Groups. There's a striking similarity in the tone of those 19th century reviewers who turned their attention to Emily Eden's account of her journey with her brother George Auckland, recently appointed the Governor General of British India, across the northern provinces of the country between 1837 and 1840. So she's actually writing the account about 20-odd years later, or it's published about 20-odd years later. On its publication in 1866, the Athenaeum decided that, like Lawrence Stern's Sentimental Journey, Eden's book had no information of interest to the Statistical Society. Fortnightly Review agreed. It is true that very little of what is commonly called useful knowledge will be found in these volumes. Yet, it is precisely Eden's failure to provide useful knowledge that was seen as the strength of her writing. Freshness, humor, grace, charm are the typical adjectives employed about Eden's prose. Moreover, the reviewers seem to have decided that Up the Country was best described in visual terms. Athenaeum described Eden capturing, this is a quote from the review, picturesque appearances of Indian life and of her picturesque misery and magnificence. That is India's, not Eden's. Fortnightly Review applauded the book as a series of pictures true to life. In her letters, we do not read about India, we see it. This split between useful knowledge and picturesque confirms Nigel Leask's analysis of the two dominant modes in British imperial travel writing of the Romantic and early Victorian eras. Whereas useful knowledge, comprising of topographical details, population statistics, administrative and political analysis, is a mark of what Leask calls the survey modality, the picturesque was marked by its explicit anti-utilitarianism, antiquarianism, and what Leask calls associationist ethics. Thus, drawing from the British visual arts theory that had fused Italian landscape with the details of Dutch school, the anti-utilitarian strain of the picturesque eschewed any representation of industry, modernity, or technological improvement. Its peculiar antiquarianism focused attention on ancient ruins, not to celebrate their splendor, but to view them with a mixture of nostalgia and melancholy by the inevitable passage of time and the cyclical rise and fall of civilization. Finally, the picturesque perspective sought to find echoes of the perceived peace and beauty of the English and Celtic rural fringes in the hills, ruins, rivers, and villages of the exotic imperial possessions in order to link these into an associative embrace. So that's what Leask is talking about when he's talking about associative associationist ethics. So in India, you see the reflection of a peaceful rural Celtic countryside. This is one example of the picture. It's got, this is northern India. You'll see this repeatedly in both Eden's own painting, but also a number of paintings and later photographs of the time. And the term uses there is picturesque, the idea of the sublime, the forest, the hills, etc. That's another example of the normative idea of the picturesque. You see Taj in the background, the white building, and you see the ruins. It's interesting that the foreground, that the focus is not on Taj, but on the ruins. And you can't see it very well, but this is an extensive network of temples and buildings that have decayed over time, and that is taken to be one of the normative ideas of picturesque, the idea that this now lies in ruins. So for Leask, those are the two normative ideas of the picturesque, the idea of the sublime, natural sublime, and the idea of the ruins. And I wanted to today argue that this, although these are present in Eden's writings, she does something quite quirky with it, and I want to ask why. So consider a famous passage from Eden's text. Remember, this has been reviewed in terms of the picturesque, and this is how she describes one particular scene. Actually, she reflects on a particular scene here. Perhaps 2,000 years hence, she says, when the art of steam has been forgotten, some black governor general of England will be marching through its southern provinces and will go and look at some ruins and doubt whether London was ever a large town and will feed some white-looking skeletons and say what distress the poor creatures must be in. Eden's musings here at first sight confirms Leask's diagnosis about the picturesque artist's curious melancholic attachment displayed towards the antiquarian. The visual evidence of the inevitable decay of the past civilizations brings to her mind here a salutary reminder of the fragility of the present dispensation, leading to dark musings about its apocalyptic slide into oblivion here, figured as the colonization of England in the near future by India. The charge of this passage has been registered by a host of critics. This is quite a remarkable scene. Where she goes on like this for a page or two, where she imagines the future England colonized by India and the resultant ruin of the country. Joe Robertson, for example, comments, Eden's writings cast India as a literal burial ground, which figuratively comes to represent a site of premature death and imperial decay, a colonial mausoleum not for Indian past glories, but for British ones. In a fascinating geographical and temporal displacement, she depicts a future in which British civilization is replaced by a population of curious Indian colonizers. And there are various other examples of how contemporary critics have noted the charge of these passages. But passages such as these also seem, that is Eden's, passages such as these in Eden's writing also seem to turn the picturesque, which Leask sees organizing the representation of British India for metropolitan British consumption, into a slightly different animal. The momentary but unflinching recognition of the inevitable destruction of the imperial self seems to be, at least to me, in excess of the domesticating boundaries of the picturesque. The spoil, precisely what Leask sees as the sacrosanct element of the mode, that is, the composure of aesthetic form. What we get instead in Eden's writing, as again a host of critics point out, is an uneven mixture of ironic observation, humor, acidic commentary, and glib generalization, all qualities that should not be in normative picturesque writing, as we normally know it. But I want to start with this point of the stylistic unevenness in or the uneven picturesque in Eden's writing. Let us concede then that Emily Eden's account was far from being, as a contemporary critic insisted, consistently charming, gay, delightful, or melancholic. Anybody who's read the book won't be able to maintain that she was consistently gay or consistently charming, etc. It's very, very dark at various points. Let us call the style then, at best, unevenly picturesque. I want to proceed with this question of unevenness of a style. What historical and material realities were her writing attempting to capture so that the normative boundaries of the picturesque mode had to be stretched beyond their normal confines? Hitherto, Eden's stylistic excesses have been analyzed in the terms of radically different, this Leask does this very well, radically different land ownership patterns in India and Britain. So going back to what I was saying about the historical explanation of difference in style, this is something that Leask does in an exemplary